One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
I think that it was a mistake to be for the ban of TikTok.
He has a significant tie to China with Tesla, and I haven't seen nearly as many people talking about that.
But what I say is that if we did want to have a law saying we don't want social media companies owned by the United States like broadcasters, let's have that law first. And in the CFIUS process, where you evaluate foreign investment, they've degraded their capabilities after October 7th, but now you need a political solution to have new governance of a recognition of a Palestinian state. Like
what do you want to be addressed as? Do you prefer to be addressed as...
Row is
just
fine.
Row?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I like just Row anyway. I feel like that's better.
Yeah, that's I like going by that. That's what I've been known as since I was in junior high.
Yeah, I think that's more personable. I think that's just the way to be. You know, titles are great and everything on paper, but I think on one-on-one interactions, it sort of creates a little bit of an unnecessary barrier sometimes.
Exactly. I think there's a whole new generation of people in Congress who aren't very stuck on all the formalities and the titles and, you know, we text each other, we're on a group chat. It's a different generation.
Yeah, it is. And I feel like you're very plugged in with our generation.
Well, I hope so. I mean, you guys, you're in a different, I'm Gen X, you know, you guys are, I don't know if you're millennial Gen Z, but I think both of the generations are very different than where the baby boomers were.
Absolutely. There's definitely a bit of a generational divide, but I think that that's somewhat common for the oldest generation and the youngest generation to have a little bit of tension.
Yeah. I think the reality is that things haven't been working that well for many people in this country. I mean, it's piled up on student debt. Reproductive rights have been taken away. You've got folks who can't afford a house. People are seeing the killing in Gaza, and they're saying that's not the world we want to live in. And so I think young people are saying, okay, what are you doing with this country? I mean, climate is a huge issue, and that's part of the anger.
It absolutely is part of the anger. I mean, I'm a history person, so for me, seeing that the wealth gap is more severe than it was prior to the French Revolution, that's pretty alarming.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, the wealth gap in the United States itself has exploded. In the 1980s, we used to be 50th in this Gini coefficient, which measures wealth inequality around the world. And we're now 128th. China is 77. Western European democracies like France are in the 30s. We've gone to 128th. You've got $10 trillion of market value and wealth in my district, Apple, Google, Tesla, NVIDIA, and the large parts of this country where there's no economic growth, no economic opportunity, and people are being left out.
What would you attribute that to?
I think a couple of things. One, we allowed basically unfettered capitalism in this country in the 1970s on. And we saw manufacturing leave. We saw hollowing out of factories. We saw the decline of unions. We saw corporate greed, where it was, we were just going to go where the cheapest possible labor is. And then when we had this technology revolution, it helped certain areas, and it helped people in finance, it helped people in technology, but there was no real sense of how do we get that kind of industry and jobs in every part of the district. So you've had massive inequality with the wealth going to the finance and tech folks and a lot of other people left out.
Where do you feel like politics factors in there? Because I feel like a lot of people, especially people who are in lower middle class, they feel that politicians, due to lobbyists and super PACs, are taking a lot of money and that money is trumping their political interests. Would you say that that's true?
Absolutely. It's 100% true. I mean, this is why I don't take any PAC or lobbyist money. I'm one of 10 members of Congress, and I think we got to ban super PACs in this country. It's horrible. It's basically billionaires and multimillionaires are trying to control elections. But I'd say there are three things I would do if I wanted to deal with the income inequality in this country. One is have real plans to get new factories, new industry, and new technology-oriented jobs in every part of this country. I mean, there's no reason we can't use the modern AI and modern technology to create these jobs, not just in Silicon Valley. Number two, lower the costs. Have $10 a day childcare, have free public college or vocational education, have medical debt, and have Medicare for all. Lower the cost people feel. And then number three is raise wages by supporting unionization and an increase in the minimum wage.
I think that those sound like very practical approaches to me. Do you feel that you'll be able to implement that change, though?
Very hard, unless we get a movement around it. I mean, we've got to get a lot of people saying, I call it a new economic deal. You know, just like FDR at the media, we need a new economic deal in this country. I mean, the economy is not working for a lot of people. I mean, you look at the New York Times today, and Donald Trump's up in like six states. And then you look beyond the headline, and it says the reason he's up is that the vast majority of people who are upset in this country want big change. They don't think they're getting big change. Now, he's, in my view, big, terrible change. He was going to take the country back, but he's some change. And I think what people really want is big change that's going to help them, and we've got to mobilize around that.
With Donald Trump, it's always been my opinion that the reason why he has such a steadfast base, among other things, is because he's very easy to interpret. I feel like a lot of his fans, you hear this sort of echoing of, I don't agree with everything that he says, or I don't agree with everything that he does, but he's talking about things other people don't talk about. And I personally attribute that to the fact that he's not using a lot of political jargon. He pretty much stays at a fifth grade reading level. So people who don't typically get to interact with politics, now they feel that they can. Why do you think that other politicians haven't adopted at least that approach, being more accessible?
I think he speaks his mind. No one ever thinks that he's not speaking his mind. I don't think that we should necessarily copy the simplicity of his solutions, because the simplicity of his solutions haven't actually improved life for anyone, right? I mean, it's not like he's bringing all these new factories back when he was president, or it's not like he actually helped the working class people that he championed. But the question is, how do we communicate simply that two things? One, that people were ripped off or wronged and they did not get a fair shake. And two, that we need big change in this country to change institutions that aren't working. And I think those two simple thoughts Trump conveys, that people have real anger at the system and he's going to shake things up and change things. Now, he does it in a way that I don't think is actually going to improve people's lives. But we've got to first say that, and then we can say, okay, here's how we're actually going to change things. Here's how your kids are going to get better jobs. Here's how it's going to make a difference for your pocketbook, what we're doing.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely true. Do you think, when you say big change, what I think of is, I think people just don't like the political system as it is now at its core in many ways. Do you think the two-party system has any long-term ability to maintain, or do you think it's going to just continue to dissolve?
I think we're going to see more third parties, and I have no problem with third party candidates. I mean, you should have a vibrant democracy. I do think in this election, it's a binary choice between Biden and Trump. And so obviously, from my perspective, I hope Biden wins and we've got to persuade people for independence. But I think you're going to continually see more people be nonpartisan, registration as independent or for third parties. But the real thing that's going to get politics to change is if we have reform, get money out of politics, make sure members of Congress aren't trading stock, make sure that members of Congress aren't becoming lobbyists after they're done their service, have term limits for Supreme Court justices. You know, we got to change the system.
Yeah, I completely agree. One thing I wanted to ask you about that I think you're in the minority on this, and I thought it was a really interesting choice on your part. You voted against the TikTok ban. Can you speak to what you did?
Are you on TikTok?
I am on TikTok. TikTok is where my whole career began, so I do have an overt bias, to be transparent.
I gotta get you to follow me on TikTok, and we gotta do something on TikTok. But the reality is, it's a free speech issue. You've got 170 million Americans on TikTok. You got a lot of young people, right? How many times have you had old politicians be like, "We need you to get involved. You got to get engaged. We want you to have a voice." So the young people finally get a voice on TikTok. And then what do the politicians do? The gray haireds do? Well, we're going to take it away. I mean, give me a break. Look, there are legitimate concerns that you don't want data going to the Chinese Communist Party, or you don't want the Chinese Communist Party interfering in the algorithm. So make that illegal. Say that anyone on TikTok or at Oracle should not be allowed to have the interference of the Chinese Communist Party. But you can't just take away the speech of a lot of Americans. And then people have such misconceptions. These 60, 70-year-old Congress people think that all TikTok is people dancing. You know, they think that the only thing people are talking about is like Kendrick Lamar and Drake. And they don't have any understanding that they're like social studies teachers on there and their educational programs and people don't have mental health. I was like, maybe you want to just get on the platform once. It's not what you think.
I couldn't agree more. I'm an educational creator myself and predominantly talk about history and current events and fun facts and medical misinformation and things of that nature. And from my perspective on the back end of TikTok, those are actually the kinds of creators that TikTok pushes, that they give programs to, where you can make more money if you're doing education-based content. And I often cite sources in my content. And so when I saw Hillary Clinton on the news the other day saying that TikTok is not a valid source of information, I did take it a little bit personally, because there certainly is misinformation on there. But what she was directly referencing was content creators on the ground in Gaza filming their firsthand experience. And she titled that propaganda. What do you think about that?
Well, I respectfully disagree with the Secretary of State to say that all of TikTok somehow is propaganda. What I would say, you know, she and I both went to Yale Law School, that what they teach you at a liberal arts education is you get your sources and information from as many perspectives as possible, and then it's for you to sift through it. So if someone was saying, well, I take every video I see on TikTok as a gospel, I would say, no, that's not right. But I also would say it's not right if you take everything you read in the New York Times as gospel, or everything you hear from a politician as gospel. Be exposed to a broad range of perspectives, and then make your determination. But, you know, I know a lot of people are down on young folks today. I just want to be clear. I'm very proud of young Americans. I think it's an exceptional generation. I think you have a generation of people who are overcoming a lot of racism, sexism, are understanding each other's cultures, care about climate, care about making a difference in the world. And so I'm always wary about, people taking shots at young Americans.
As am I. I'm part of the Better Internet Initiative, which is partnered with the United Nations to combat misinformation on TikTok specifically. And we do a lot of work to make sure that, you know, we're putting accurate information out about subjects like wealth inequality and climate change, and even things that are going on in Gaza as well. And back in 2016 at Stony Brook University, I was a part of a pro-Palestine protest against Israel, because I consider it to be an apartheid state. And there were only 11 other students there with me. And the protest was disbanded. It was considered to be a hate group. And so just going from 2016 to 2024 and seeing what a massive cultural shift there has been around the narrative surrounding Israel and Palestine and this longstanding conflict since the Nakba has been truly, I think, actually shocking. And I don't think that a lot of those older members of government were prepared to see such a huge realignment of culture and the way people are reacting to it. And I think that's in large part due to the fact that they're getting a front row seat to what's happening in Gaza. Do you feel like that's contributed to the TikTok ban? Do you think that older political figures who don't want to get on the app and don't want to experience it firsthand like you are just feeling that the easier approach is just to ban the app rather than combat these very real concerns people have?
Well, first, I think you're very eloquent about talking about the cultural shift in our understanding about justice for Palestine, the need for a Palestinian state, the occupation in the West Bank and Gaza. And my own view is I believe that there should be an Israeli state that is a Jewish democratic state, but that there has to be a Palestinian state. And there, the reason, partly, that there is more awareness of these issues is that the younger generation is more diverse. They have stories from all different parts of the world. They have friends from different parts of the world. And I think that that's helping add layer of texture and complexity to the political narrative. And so good for them for speaking out. That doesn't mean every one of their perspectives is correct, but they're adding new voices to our dialogue. You know, I used to think that the real reason, the majority reason that was TikTok was banned was just a fear of China. And that certainly was the reason Mike Gallagher banned it. And I thought it was overbroad. But then I heard Mitt Romney speak. And I actually put this out on TikTok and it went viral. And Mitt Romney is basically like, yeah, all my colleagues voted against the TikTok ban because they thought there was too much content on there about Palestine. And I said, you're just saying the quiet part out loud. I mean, why are you taking that approach? And by the way, censorship never works. So I was very surprised that he was giving that rationale.
I was also surprised to see that, specifically because he comes from a Mormon background. And historically, there's been very few massacres on American soil. And the first one was actually Mormons were victims of that. So you would think, with his background, that he would be sympathetic to marginalized groups in that way. And so I was quite surprised to see that that was his stance on that. But at the same time, I did appreciate, sort of begrudgingly, the transparency, because he said out loud, like you said, the quiet part that many members of Gen Z on TikTok had believed was the truth all along.
Well, I think that it certainly helped create the scrutiny for the app. Now, I had people push back at me and they were saying, well, statistically, there's more pro-Palestine content on TikTok than Instagram and other social media. And I said, well, one, that's because other social media may be suppressing political speech. Two, it may be that the TikTok audience is a more global audience. There could be reasons that there's an app where if one side has currency, then more people, because of network effects, will join there. But you can't take statistics and use that to ban the free speech of people. I mean, if you had evidence that the Chinese Communist Party was engaging in an algorithmic manipulation to push up Palestinian content and suppress pro-Israel content or pro-American content, fine, then deal with it. But I have yet to see a single piece of evidence that that's actually taking place. And why aren't you then banning the Chinese Communist Party for interfering in any social media app instead of taking 170 million Americans and stopping their speech? But, you know, I've gotten attacked a lot for my position against a ban on TikTok, or for my position calling for a permanent ceasefire or not having offensive weapons to Netanyahu. But I think that those attacks are from the current powers that be in the Beltway, and I think they're just out of touch with a whole new generation that's going to emerge in politics.
I also find, like, the sort of vitriol that's being thrown towards TikTok to be interesting, because historically, Instagram and mainly Twitter and Snapchat as well, when there have been other conflicts, when the Black Lives Matter protests were at their peak, they were also covering these events, and I didn't really see the same sort of anxiety and fear. Do you think that is that's just due to the fact that TikTok was created originally overseas?
I do. I mean, I think that the fear is because it's a Chinese owned company initially, even though they have many American investors. And there is reason to be concerned about our data going to China. And there is reason to be concerned if there was any foreign country trying to influence the algorithms. But then why not just pass those laws? Say, American data should be protected. It should be illegal to transfer your data to any a foreign country where there is a risk of it being compromised. And anyone who's operating an app in the United States could be held criminally liable if they are cooperating with the foreign government's interference on an algorithm. But instead of passing the obvious thing, we went directly to a ban. And that's what set off red flags for me.
Right. I also found that somewhat strange, because in the past, Mark Zuckerberg has been actively caught selling data
Yeah. The whole Cambridge Analytica scandal was about the compromise of data, and other data brokers have sold data to China, and other apps have had foreign interference. I mean, most famously in the 2016 election. So I think you had here a combination of just such fear mongering about anything China. And so there are legitimate concerns on China. I'm on the China Select Committee, but that doesn't mean that just because something is China, we take draconian measures to compromise speech. And then combined with that, and you had all these people say, well, the TikTok is full of messages that are pro-Palestine. So it just must be that it's a biased algorithm. Well, we've seen on college campuses that a lot of young people are pro-Palestine. You may disagree with them, but I hardly think that the Chinese Communist Party is fomenting all these campus protests.
I couldn't agree more. I also find it interesting because Elon Musk, who now owns what was formerly known as Twitter, now it's known as X, he has a significant tie to China with Tesla, and I haven't seen nearly as many people talking about that being a potential conflict of interest. Do you have any opinions on that?
Well, look, I don't think that we should just have a total decoupling with China. I think what the mistake that was made with China, we started this podcast with that, is we let too much of our steel, aluminum industry go to China. We have this massive trade deficit. They have over-relied on an export production economy at the expense of the consumer welfare of their own people. All their production is export, and they're not producing enough for their own people, and they're not a diversified enough economy. We hollowed out all of our manufacturing. We didn't hollow out our movies, right? No one would say, let Bollywood make all the movies. We still have Hollywood. We didn't hollow out Wall Street. We didn't say, let London do all the finance, but we hollowed out a lot of our production. And so what I think is we need to rebalance it so that we're building more production. But that doesn't mean that we stop doing any business with China. And so Tesla or Intel, a lot of these companies are global and are going to have some footprint selling or importing from China. And I think we have to recognize that complexity, which we do in many other industries, but we didn't with TikTok.
Yeah, with the TikTok ban, beyond it being a free speech issue and beyond like the clear bias I have since a lot of my career comes from TikTok. And
is that how you started out? I've got to look now at your sessions on TikTok and your content.
It is how I started out. And so because ban TikTok, I'm going to be on that tort lawsuit for lost wages. But I do have a practical like concern beyond just like it affecting TikTok, though, because there is no, from what I can tell, historical precedent for us trying to force the hand of a company to sell to an American entity in this way before. And so it gives me pause, because would this then set a precedent for all international conglomerates that are based in other countries but operate in countries that are not their own? Would it then become a sort of slippery slope where countries where we have industries like Apple, for example, is very popular internationally, will there now be an expectation that they have to sell specific branches of their corporations to these countries?
Well, I think this is a great point you raise. I mean, look, there are certain areas which we do regulate, right? Like broadcast news. We wouldn't allow a Russian or Chinese or foreign country to own our broadcast news. And social media is different, I think, than broadcast news, because broadcast news, you really are controlling the content. Social media, you have decentralization. So I'm less concerned about social media being owned by some non-American source, as long as there's not foreign interference in algorithms and there's data privacy. But what I'd say is that if we did want to have a law saying we don't want social media companies owned by the United States like broadcasters, let's have that law first. And in the CFIUS process, where you evaluate foreign investment, you can then turn down that kind of acquisition. But you can't allow a company to be in the United States, grow, and then suddenly we don't like it and retroactively take that away. That's how they do things, frankly, in times like communist China. I mean, what makes us a democracy, what's going to allow us to thrive and win, is that we are a free society and we don't change the rules midway.
I couldn't agree more. When the CEO of TikTok was being questioned, who he's from Singapore.
Yeah.
He's not Chinese. A lot of people saw that line of questioning and felt that it was just sort of incredibly xenophobic. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, it was xenophobic. I mean, half the people in Congress thought he was Chinese and not Singaporean. They had to explain that. And so what if he was Chinese-American, right? I mean, you shouldn't profile people even if they are Chinese-American. Eric Wan, who's a good friend of mine who started Zoom, was denied coming into this country 9 times because he was from China. And I'm glad that he made Zoom here instead of Zoom in China, right? I mean, most times that Chinese-American immigrants who've come here have enriched America. But in this case, he wasn't even Chinese and he was being labeled like that. It reminded me of seeing the congressional hearing where you had members of Congress asking Sundar Pichai at Google what Google was going to do to regulate the iPhone, because these members of Congress didn't know that Apple made the iPhone and Google did search. So the level of illiteracy about technology is shocking. And then you had this basically just xenophobic reaction. And it's unfortunate because there are real issues in terms of data security, in terms of algorithmic independence. Focus on those instead of just engaging in this xenophobic politics.
Since you brought up sort of like an illiteracy to technology, I've seen a lot of lawmakers talk about how part of the reason they're trying to force TikTok's hand to sell is because they seem to believe there's going to be this sort of massive algorithmic difference if they do sell. But what a lot of people may not be familiar with is that the branch of TikTok that operates in America, it's separate from the branch that operates in China. So why would there be an algorithmic difference?
Yeah, I mean, the argument is that it's being run by China, these algorithms. And that's what I've not seen evidence. Said. If someone showed me evidence that the Chinese Communist Party is trying to influence the algorithms here and are showing content that has a anti-American or even anti-Israel bias, I would be very concerned. But you can't just say that's the case because you have some statistics of content that you don't like. I mean, just a basic statistical thing is correlation doesn't equal causation. Just because something be beyond TikTok that you don't like doesn't mean it was caused by Chinese interference. And the whole problem is they rushed to pass this without any evidence of that.
Yeah, back in October, when sympathies towards Palestine are really on the rise for like the first time in really my lifetime to this scale, I've really never seen such like an outpouring of support for those in Gaza before. Israel was releasing a lot of photos and videos that then users on TikTok were putting through apps to look if there was any AI used in the videos and images, and a lot of it was coming back positive.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
For AI intervention. And it seems to me that technology is progressing so quickly that every country utilizes propaganda. It's not just us. It is a political tool. It's been commonplace for centuries in every single nation at this point. And there are good and bad components of that, naturally. But it seems to me that TikTok is posing a real problem for government entities that now don't know how to use that tool that they have been so reliant on in the past.
Yeah, I mean, what you've seen now is the democratization in some ways of technology, right? I mean, I could give some boring speech on the House floor and 500 people may view it, and you could have some really intelligent conversation about American history and foreign policy, and hundreds of thousands may view it. So your voice now matters in a way that it probably didn't 10 years ago or 6 years ago compared to a congressperson. And there are ways now on TikTok or other social media that you can check government generated content and come to your own conclusions. And there are by and large, in my view, I'm a fan of the democratization of voice, of the democratization of technology. Now, there needs to be guardrails. You shouldn't be allowed to take data. We need to find more civil ways of having conversation. You can't just have shouting matches and screaming matches online and think that that's going to be healthy for democracy. But I think the two camps are, do you believe that you want the information and power in the hands of a beltway elite? Or do you believe that we need to democratize decision-making in America? I'm on the latter camp.
I really couldn't agree more, because the whole point of having state representatives, for example, was to be a voice of the people who previously, you know, couldn't state their own opinions in mass and act as a reflection of what their actual needs were. Whereas now, we can do that. You can analytically see exactly what people are thinking, what they're feeling, where political tides are shifting. And I think what is interesting about that is there seems to be a sort of growing hostility towards government, because it's feeling like a lot of people online are voicing their opinions about specific issues. You can see exactly how many people agree with that issue. And then they're not feeling that their representatives, who are intended to be public servants, are serving their voice. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Like, yeah, I think that's exactly the anger in this country. People want common sense gun safety laws and background checks. They're not getting that. People want reproductive rights to be protected and view that as an equality issue. Why should men get to decide what they do with their bodies, but women not get to decide what they do with those? It's fundamentally unequal. And they see an old Supreme Court with people who have no clue about the facts of modern life taking those rights away from them. They see members of Congress, they're trading stock, and they say, how is this happening? They see members of Congress getting tons of money from defense contractors and big pharma and hospitals. And at the same time, they can't afford medical bills. They can't afford childcare bills. They can't afford college bills. They understand that the system isn't working for them. And this is a disconnect that now is more and more apparent because they can voice what they're feeling on social media, and others, they can see what others are feeling. And they're not dependent now on having the network news give them a platform. So I think that the modern political movement is very much going to be dependent on being able to speak to real people's needs and aspirations and be an agent for change.
I couldn't agree more. Do you feel like Joe Biden's camp's involvement in trying to, as they would put it, combat misinformation online and implement all of these rules with social media litigation, which I personally think social media does need litigation right now. It's sort of the Wild West, and it's such a new thing that there's not a lot of protection there, you know? So I don't think anybody disagrees that there needs to be guardrails with social media, but I am getting the impression from what I'm seeing online, and I do try and avoid echo chambers, so maybe you're seeing something different, but I'm getting the impression that it's having the opposite effect, where hostilities are sort of growing towards the Democratic Party from their own base. They're feeling like, why didn't you codify Roe v. Wade? It feels like you guys just want to run on that platform every election, and that's why. Or why are we jumping to banning TikTok? Or why aren't we listening to the UN when the UN is calling out certain behaviors? Do you think Joe Biden can win still?
I do. Do you?
I would like for Donald Trump not to be president, but I'm seeing
Where are you based? What state? Are you in one of the swing states or no?
I'm in Indiana.
Okay, close enough.
Yeah.
But I think that it was a mistake to be for the ban of TikTok. I think we need to be much clearer or louder when we're talking about reproductive rights, that the first day that he wins, he's going to try to get Roe versus Wade codified, and he's going to take maximum executive orders to do that, and he's going to push Congress to do that. And the reason that we weren't able to do that is it takes 60 votes in the Senate, and he's going to push to end the filibuster so that we can get that. I mean, part of it is explaining to people why we haven't been able to codify it and what it's going to take. But I think TikTok was an unforced error on our part. You mentioned social media. Yes, we should. The area to focus is kids, right? Like you've got all these teenage girls having ideation of suicide. And that's where we should have some regulation. Some of the social media is like your worst experience in junior high on steroids. How are we allowing that to take place? Or how are we allowing people to take this data from young men and women and kids and then exploit them by targeting eating disorder type content? That's where I would focus. I wouldn't focus on taking away broadly speech rights. And then I would model what good communication looks like. I was in Wisconsin. We had Jewish students, Palestinian students. We put out a video. It actually did quite well because people had a civil conversation. And when you're president, you can do that around the country. So uplift the positive instead of trying to censor communication you don't like, because censorship rarely works. Of course, call out the blatant hate on both sides, but I would be very careful to veer into censorship.
I absolutely agree. I know that we have to wrap in a few minutes because of your time constraints, but I have two more questions for you.
Yeah, we've got about 10 more minutes.
One is serious, one is lighthearted. So we'll end with lighthearted. But with the Palestine-Israel conflict, really the genocide would be the correct word, where do you think the United States is going to end up with that as of how things are looking now? I mean, we saw Israel, their spokesman took a shredder at the UN conference, which I haven't seen since Gaddafi, actually. And it's posing a lot of concerns for a lot of countries around the world. Joe Biden did come out and say that he was pulling back on sending weaponry and a few other things. With the direction things are going, do you think there's any way that we can maintain our historical position, or are we going to have to really pivot in an extreme way?
Well, first of all, we made a mistake by vetoing the UN resolution. I mean, 143 countries said that there should be a Palestinian state in the UN, including France and Australia. And we were one of 9 countries that said no. There's a law in our books, believe it or not, that people don't know of in 1990 that says if Palestine is recognized as a state in the United Nations, that the UN, U.S. can't fund the United Nations. And that Joe Biden should be explaining that law and calling for repeal of that law. I mean, how can you be saying our policy is 2 states and then not recognize a Palestinian state? And people say, oh, well, we don't want Hamas. Well, you can recognize a Palestinian state and say you don't want Hamas. I mean, the people at the UN aren't Hamas. It's the PLA. You could talk about a new Palestinian governance, but at least recognize the principle of a Palestinian state. The other thing is that what Israel is doing is like the Iraq war, a total miscalculation. I mean, Netanyahu's talking about going into Rafah to eradicate Hamas, and Hamas is popping back up in northern Gaza because you can't eradicate 30,000 fighters. I mean, you can't eradicate that. The solution is that they've degraded their capabilities after October 7th, but now you need a political solution to have new governance of a recognition of a Palestinian state. And that's why I was one of 37 Democrats who voted no to the offensive aid. That's why I'd come out for a permanent ceasefire months ago with the release of the hostages. I think President Biden is slowly getting there and seeing that this, it's not just about the awful loss of life of women and children and the heartbreak in Gaza. It's also not making Israel more secure. They're going to have a uncontrollable insurgency in Gaza. So it's a mess right now. And I think that we need more leadership, clear leadership from the President Biden saying, you know, it's time to end this war, release the hostages and have a permanent ceasefire, not a 6-week ceasefire and then you're going to start again, or 12 weeks, end it.
I completely agree. And I do think that there is definitely like a sense of conflict coming from Biden's camp, since he has been so overtly pro-Zionism for decades and decades and decades. And now thinks the tides have sort of turned with the American populace so quickly that it seems to be catching him and his camp really off guard. And then Netanyahu is it's a square rectangle situation where there's certainly some issues with how Israel has operated as a country, but also, you know, Netanyahu is doing his own things that, you know, a lot of people are having issues with him specifically.
Ask you briefly, you don't mind, where did your activism and interest in Palestine come from? I mean, do you have a a family connection there, a background there, or just you're just researching the issue as a person who cares about justice?
I have always been really into history. And so just knowing Middle Eastern history, knowing about the Nakba, it seems to me, you know, when you read about it objectively, it seems like a very clear apartheid state. It reminds me a lot of how South Africa used to operate. And I do have one of my best friends is from post-apartheid South Africa, and her father did a lot of work with Nelson Mandela. So I see a lot of parallels there. And to me, there's a lot of clear signs that indicate where you're going to land on being the right side or the wrong side of history. And I feel confident that I'm on the right side.
Well, one of the things I put out, a lot of the things I put out on Twitter or TikTok did well. One of the things that didn't do as well, but I wish more people saw, is I put a clip of Nelson Mandela in 1990 in Harlem. And he actually talks about Palestine and Israel and two states and an end of occupation. And I hope people take a time to listen to what Nelson Mandela himself said about the situation.
Yes, South Africa has a vested interest in how this conflict will play out just because of their own history and their own familiarity with it. And you probably saw that today they issued a statement saying that anybody who has been serving in the IDF from South Africa when they return will be arrested, which is a big step in South Africans or South Africa's political policy in terms of really cracking down on their stance. So that's a major political development.
Yeah, well, I don't agree with everything of South Africa, but I will say this, that I think that the ICJ needs to let that case play out, and that what the U.S. should be doing is stopping the offensive weapons, but more than that, calling for an end to the war. And you asked me about President Biden's chances. I think they're directly tied to the war ending before the Democratic Convention. And you know, we need there to be peace.
I think so, too. All right, I'm going to close out with my lighthearted question. As someone who's from California, I feel like I know what your answer is going to be, but Drake or Kendrick?
I'm for Kendrick Lamar. And, you know, I'll tell you why. I've always been a fan of Be Humble. That's one of my favorites. And Kendrick Lamar is, you know, he's an artist. He's a poet. Drake is talented, too. I'm not one of these people who diss him. Anyone who knows how hard it is to go viral knows it's not easy to make even pop songs and melodies that get as big an audience. But I'm definitely on Kendrick's side for the lyrics. So I think I know they dislike each other, but I'm torn of, like, they're all selling an enormous amount of records. I wonder if there's if it's as much a rivalry or if it's working out to both of their benefits.
I think it was initially working out for both of them, and now it's working out a little less for Drake.
Right, yeah, here. There you go. Which side are you on?
Oh, I think it's American to be Team Kendrick. We can't let that Canadian win this American rap beef.
There you go. American exceptionalism for Kendrick Lamar.
Exactly. It's incredibly patriotic to be pro-Kendrick.
As he's pointed out, I mean, he goes after Drake for being Canadian, among other things. Yes. I just think some of the stuff, and I'm not, you know, I'm a big Kendrick Lamar fan, but some of the stuff with women and the way they talk about women is problematic. And I've appreciated some of the people speaking up about that.
I agree. Well, thank you on that note so much for coming on the Days at Night podcast. We would love to have you back again. I feel like this was really
I love it. I'd enjoy it. I appreciate it. I'll have our teams connect us and let me know if you're in D.C., and I appreciate your involvement in activism and leadership.
Thank you. I will absolutely let you know next time I'm in D.C. My family lives out there, and that's where I was born. So who knows?
Oh, nice.
Could be soon.
That's it. All right. Take care.
Bye. Thank you. Like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Step up to the mic to introduce Daisy. That's the name for, followed by the KO. I ain't never seen.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.